welcome to your new life and our new times in what has been labeled as humanity's greatest leap in evolution. Dr. K is here to assist you with holistic tips and tools, clearings and activations for your vibrational upgrade. Dr. Allison J. K. has been working as an energy medicine practitioner for 20 years, having lived in Asia for 10 years to study subtle energy. People refer to Dr. K as the lightning bolt due to the high voltage of the work she does on behalf of assisting you to thrive in mind, body, and spirit. That is the greatest backdrop to life on planet Earth right now.
What do you want? What do you want? What's the one thing in your mind you want? What do you want to do this weekend? What do you want to get? What do you want to buy? What's the one thing you've been really wanting recently? What's your mind holding on to? Is it that new car? Is it the new red dress? Is it the new girlfriend? Is it the end of this relationship you're in? Is it that new job? What do you want? Or what are you working so hard to avoid? Meaning, what are you resisting? What don't you want? How long is that list? Ooh, that shifted some energy. Nowadays, it totally seems like that's the longer list, the list of what we don't want versus the list of what we do want. We're going to talk about that today in the nature of how we cling in our mind and then resist, and the forces that are at bay right now at our, in our society at large, that are helping to beef up what we call the ego mind in the meditative world, and how to get around it. And what that really connects into is the groupthink, and how to, just like we're old school operators when the telephones first started and we had to unplug the peg from the operator board and put that peg into another hole in the board to connect with another phone line, we're going to unconnect or disconnect where it's causing us grief and pain, and we're going to connect into a new circuitry, bringing in a new frequency. That's what this show is about. We're going to do some active healing and clearings during this show as well, but we want to get some of this information to you first so that you can wrap your intellectual cognitive mind around the ideas, and then we'll do the healings and the clearings. The clearings will be happening as we speak of it. As always, it's kind of the encoding that old school Qigong masters, that kind of work. When you sit and look at a master in their eyes, there's energy encoded there that you get from the working with them directly one-on-one. I know I do that with my clients. The energy comes through the eyes. And then at this point nowadays, we're so sensitive frequency-wise and vibrationally that you're getting it through my energy through listening to this. So you're getting cleared of the topics as we speak anyway, as well as your intellectual mind is being kept busy understanding the concepts. And then at the end, we're going to actually do some direct healing on some of these subconscious beliefs that trip us up with going more with the groupthink, going more with being concerned about what others are thinking about us and the ways that we hold ourselves back because we're concerned about the groupthink. So our mind is given to us to navigate this physical plane. Let me back up for a second. How frequently do we see an advertisement for a hippie with a BMW? How frequently do we see a businessman dressed in a suit eating a salad? What is it that we usually see the businessman eating? Where does your mind go? Did it go to steak? Okay. How often do we see somebody dressed in casual clothing wearing sneakers versus expensive tailored shoes with the toe points? And what does that tell us about them? So our mind is constantly making judgments or assessments based on labels, and then we're having the machinery of our ego mind take those labels in, connect with the files, bringing up the files of what we know prior to our associations with somebody who wears those type of shoes, and then we have an equal sign, somebody who has money, somebody who must have a good job, somebody who must be educated, somebody who must be hot, somebody who must care about their appearance. All of these associations start happening from one item. Nicely tailored toe-tipped shoes. on a man as opposed to a man wearing sneakers? What do we do with a dude wearing Converse in our mind versus a dude wearing Birkenstocks? Just feet wear alone or footwear alone, and we can go on a trip, right? So the nature of our ego mind is, it's called ego mind because it's the mind connected to the ego. The ego is our personality. And it's how, if you think of kids at the TOEFL 2 stage, when they start saying no, no, no to everything, it's the beginning of them forming their own identity. Then in the middle school days, and it ranges for every child, anywhere from fifth grade on up to about eighth grade. Eighth grade is usually the peak of it, the worst of it. By high school, it's done. They're ripping away from the parental family unit for identity and the going over to the peers for identity. That part of the ego mind and ego personality is being formed. And that's, both of these times are known as individuation, because that is the overall ego or personality function, is to individuate us from the group, individuate us from the collective. Carl Jung, Freud's student who broke off from Freud in Western psychology, he termed a phrase the collective consciousness, and that there is both a collective consciousness and thereby a collective unconsciousness as well, which is somewhat, we could think of, one of the ways we can think of it is groupthink. And a group energy. And one of the group thinks going on in our country right now amongst a wide amount of our population is lack or scarcity. There isn't enough, whether that be time or that be money. Another group think that's going on is, how cool is this technology? And I have my iPhone. I have my Macintosh. I'm coming to off of my Macintosh, actually my MacBook. So I enjoy it so much myself. So it's not at all saying that technology is bad. Please don't misconstrue that. But that technology is cool. I have my iPod too. So we're totally loving all the apps. We're loving all the things that technology allows us to do. So having anything new that comes at us technologically already has like a way in, because we've already labeled it as cool. So based on last week's conversation, we talked about the brain having three layers, if you will, or three parts to it. The first one's the old reptilian brain. That's more the reactive part of us. That's the old, old wiring that helps us with survival, and it deals with the sensory data. Then we have the old mammalian brain. Once we went out of reptilian days and had mammals, we have the old mammalian brain, which is known also as the emotional brain. The limbic system is there. And this is when this develops around, starting I think around age one, between one and two. And this starts to then help us identify our connection to those around us and to our environment. We start to identify as ourselves as one thing, and then there's objects external to us and people external to us, and we make sense out of our relationship to these people and objects external to us in our mind out in the world, through our emotions. That's all in this old mammalian brain. So we're making our assessments based on emotions about what's out there in the world. That's all happening in that second brain. The third brain is the neocortex again. We talked about this a bit last week with the mechanisms or the mechanics of change. The third brain, the neocortex, is where the verbal language abilities, the intelligence, what we would think of cognition, resides. So if we're forming our ego identity to separate and to individuate, and then we have that old mammalian brain that's based on emotions, and we understand our relationship to the world through our emotions, think about what that sets us up for. Now bring in the ego mind. The ego mind's, or the left brain, it's mind, the analytical brain, is meant to take in the sensory data from the environment and now cognitively find files to have the labels of what that thing is we're encountering. And frequently it's connected with emotions. So there's that emotional file. Oh, I'm smelling jasmine. I love this smell. It makes me feel peaceful. It reminds me of warm country nights relaxing when I was a kid growing up laying in the fields, for example. Or, ooh, I don't like the smell of cow manure. I remember when I stepped in a big pile of manure, and manure is bad, and it's caca, and it's yucky. That's an emotional response, but it's also a mental or cognitive label. So we're walking around with these heads on top of these necks, on top of these hearts and emotions and body that have this filing system and this labeling system and this judging system. And the ego mind really is taught, trained, innately wired to seek out what makes us feel good and to avoid what gives us pain. And all of that is dependent on our own personal history and experience. So what we construe and label and have memories of that bring up emotional responses and reactions to as good will be different from a friend who's had a different life experience. So we might like the hippie with the BMW, and our friend might like the businessman eating the salad, for example. That's a very fine distinction. Perhaps it wasn't as good of an example, but you get the point. I am hoping that our minds are going around and labeling, and it's based on our past. Let me give you even further information that helps enlighten this idea and understanding of just how much of what we're labeling in our environment is based on history. Our senses when it goes from picking up a piece of data in the environment, a sensory eye, ear, what is it, hearing, seeing, touching, smelling, tasting. It comes in any of those senses. It then goes into perception. Perception is when I teach psychology, it's two separate chapters in the psychology textbook. Senses is the first chapter before perception. Perception is its own separate chapter. So we pick up the senses from the environment, and then we go into the brain and look for the file that is connected to what we're sensing in the environment. And that's that cognitive label. Oh, this is a cherry. That's the cognitive dry label. And then, oh, I love cherries because they make me feel blank. And then there's the emotional connection to how cherries make us feel. So when we're picking up data from the environment and it's not something that we have experienced before, our mind in the perception mode will look for the most closely associated files. So there is a wiring innately in our mental complex that looks for labeling what we're experiencing new with old history. So that's a trip up in and of itself. But then if you take it over into the world of the desire to avoid pain and the desire to seek pleasure, how much repetition is that setting us up for? How much exposure to new is that setting us up for? And how much shutting down of the new is that setting us up for? And then you have the example of in South Asia, Southeast Asia, the hunters will trap monkeys by setting up a pumpkin, like a big, big gourd, not that big, like medium size, and they'll carve out the meat on the inside. They'll leave a hole just big enough to fit a banana in. The monkey will come along and they'll sniff out the banana and they'll put their hand into the gourd to get the banana, but they're trapped because the hole is just big enough to fit either the banana and the hand, but not both. So the monkey has a desire for the banana. It follows this desire. It reaches in, and now it's trapped. It becomes a prisoner of its own desires, which we as humans have two things a monkey doesn't have. We have awareness, which is what this conversation today is working to raise, and then we have choice. So we have this innate wiring that motivates us to avoid pain and go after pleasure, and we have this innate wiring that is robotic labeling of what is good and what is bad and what gives us pleasure and what gives us pain. And when we come back, we're going to go ahead and talk about how that then shows up with what we do with our own perceptions and then the concern of how others are perceiving us. It creates this whole dynamic. And then how we can change it and make it simple and easy. Okay, I'll hear you, or you'll hear me after break. Call in today, too, if you want. Hi. Okay, so we're talking about how the mind clings and can get it become a trap and a prisoner of itself. How we can become prisoners of our own desires is another way of saying it. Sorry, I was just finishing up something in between. And so there's this well-known parable in the East. There's these two monks. They're walking down a path in the mountains, and they're next to a river. And they come across a woman who needs help crossing the river. And so one of the monks picks up the woman and crosses the river with the woman in his arms and puts her down on the other side. The second monk walking along with them crossing the river, and then the woman goes off on her own way and the two monks continue on their own way. And the second monk, who did not carry the woman across the river, brings up after walking for about a half an hour in silence, "I can't believe you went and carried that woman. I can't believe you touched that woman. We're not supposed to go near a woman, never mind pick them up and touch them and carry them." And the first monk said, "Well, I can't believe that you're still carrying that. I left the woman down at the riverbank when I let go of her." And it's a parable obviously used to talk about how the mind can cling to anger, can cling to judgments and desires. And we're living in a time right now, y'all, it's really important to get these connections. So hopefully you can listen in a little less of a distracted way at this point, because this is the key. We're living in a time right now where advertising has been working since about the 1950s. It's known in the schools of advertising and marketing to work on the emotions of the viewer. If we can activate the emotions of the viewer of the commercial or the ad, and we can get them to make associations of product to an emotional state that we desire, then they know they've won. Marketing 101 is very simply market to their emotions, pull in either on fear or pull in on wanting to fit in and be that much cooler or that much better. And if you'll notice how you react to like one of those sales pages online or to a new program online, you're not there yet until your emotions are activated. But we're not usually aware enough. Here's that first of two things humans have that monkeys don't: awareness and choice. We're not aware enough because we're usually so busy in our lives, you know, going about our lives in the day to day, that we're not taught or trained to observe our own thinking. And so we'll just react, operating from the first and second brains, as opposed to using the neocortex or the more advanced, even frontal cortex lobes that get developed from maturity and then are put there. We didn't talk about this fourth lobe last week. I referred to it, but we didn't talk about it. It's what's known to be activated from meditation or a sustained spiritual practice or a sustained spiritual / self-disciplinary practice. It's basically there for transcendence. There's a great book out there called The Biology of Transcendence, and hopefully I'm going to have the author on down the line to talk about some of the concepts in there, where it's kind of a merger between neuroscience and the path of meditation. But what's understood in the world of brains and studying brains, not just neuroscience, but just studying brains and the mind, is that the first two brains are more reactive and old reptilian and old mammalian and old school and base behavior. And what we want to do is emotionally mature and let go of that reactivity to be more peaceful and calm and have less of a tendency to cling and react and let and our mind cling to something, to a desire or to an avoidance of something that we construe is going to be painful, and end up as a prisoner of our own mind's demands by more actively using the neocortex or the newer brains and the prefrontal cortex, which is actually developed and cultivated through a meditation practice or a sustained yoga path lifestyle, for example, or just simply what we're talking about too today, awareness and then choice. So advertising, we live in a world of advertising. There was a recent study done. I remember talking about the making of an iPod with my students. We were doing a particular section in English literature about the transcendentalists, and we went back into the making of an iPod because of its connection to what we were talking about as the Industrial Revolution kicked in America. And one of the studies that we found was that self-esteem has been proven to decrease with increased viewing of ads and advertising, because they get us on, do you want to be like this businessman with the watch and the BMW, eating the good food, traveling with these cool hot girls and the jacuzzi? Think jacuzzi. What does a guy typically think? Action. At night. Right? Think, what's another association? A guy, the old association used to be a guy who takes care of himself, and the way he looks was what? First we had to have the term metrosexual so that we wouldn't think guys who took care of their looks were gay. And so we then got the term metrosexual a bunch of years back, like five-ish or so years back, seven maybe. And now it's now cool and expected for guys to take care of their looks. But what do we think about? All right, so I've already gone on that vein in the first segment about how much we label and how much we judge, but that's the exact mechanism advertising uses. So it's actually creating that much more of the self-esteem, unless we live at a certain level of status with these products, and then we fit in. Living in Asia, I used to come back here in the summers and say they're on fire, because it was just as they were globalizing and modernizing. And I lived there for the transition of when Taiwan was to China, what America was to Mexico, in the days of NAFTA, when all of our production went down to Mexico, and it was just more the white, as we said, white collar work left in America. The same thing was happening in Taiwan while I lived there. The production, we used to get things over here, remember, that said made in Taiwan, and now it's made in China. So they've done that same transition we did with Mexico. And I was watching them modernize and commercialize, and it caught like rapid fire. And there's a variety of reasons for that. One of them is face. That is a concept that's in the Asian cultures that we don't have as a organized, structured cultural value as much as they do there. And it's, you don't offend someone's face. You don't cause them to lose pride publicly. And one of the key ways to maintain face is to not stand out, to not individuate somewhat. Nowadays, it's a little bit different because we're modern, but there's the sense of the safety in numbers and the group think. And the advertising was able to catch on like wildfire, because the newer generation was hungry and ready to no longer associate in their minds what their grandparents were, which was ancient, old, antiquated, outdated, traditional, and they didn't want that. They wanted iPods and McDonald's and sneakers and professional sports and TV and Hollywood. All that that symbolized to them was the equal sign, modern, or the equal sign with the slash through it, meaning does not equal grandparents of mom and dad. So the marketing over to Asia is huge, and it's working, and it's working even more easily than it is here, because they're hungrier for it, and they don't have the context historically that we did with the buildup of refrigerators leading to microwaves, leading to the coffee machines, all the modern conveniences we have here. So I was able to watch the group think just totally get taken hold of by advertising and marketing of just labels and all that, the emotional connections that the, particularly at that time, the Chinese associated with what those labels meant in their minds emotionally. It was like I was able to conduct this as a study while, and observe it while I was there, but knowing our own culture coming back here, and then now seeing one of the key ways that our ego desires are preyed upon, our desire to avoid pain and seek pleasure. Let me go for this kind of relationship because this kind of guy is usually more enjoyable. Let me not go near this kind of guy because this kind of guy is usually out for only one thing kind of thinking is applied to a whole industry that's really taken a grip on our culture. And we'll talk about that when we come back so you can really see this play at work. And then we'll get to the tools and the healings. Okay, cheers. We'll see you when you get back. Hi, welcome back. Okay, so if we're living in a world that is really flashy advertising and really great packaging of products that run our consumer engine, then we're getting bombarded by what basically are messages to our emotional brain to say, hey, you can be like this if you just buy this. I don't mean to oversimplify and talk down. I'm trying to get to the basics to help you then understand in the Buddhist world, what the work is as an adult is to ultimately let go of all attachments and all desires that cause afflictive emotions. I remember for me, one of my biggest in the beginning, because I had a point of view and it was wrong. But one of my biggest point of views that was a stumbling block for me with Buddhism was I like being passionate. I like having desires. I don't want to become this emotionally even balanced person that doesn't get, you know, really explosively happy and full of joy. I like being passionate and happy. And so what I eventually learned was it's not that you're getting rid of your emotions, Allison, when you go on the Buddhist path and you work with yourself and your mind with meditation. It's just that you don't go so high and you don't go so low. You tend to keep a more even keel because there aren't so many things that can trigger you to react with either a positive emotion or a negative emotion, that my thoughts and my, therefore, emotional attachment to some of those thoughts, when the emotions get activated because it's a desire to either avoid pain or seek pleasure, I have less labels, I have less associations going to the emotional connection of that thing leads to pleasure, that thing leads to pain, seek that, avoid that, going on in my wiring. So the Buddhist path of meditation or any meditative practice at this point over here in the West, we don't even need to necessarily connect it to Buddhism because it's so secularized. The way I teach it, it's not with a Buddhist or a Hindu backing as much as it's just simply work with the thoughts as they come in. Let them float by and come back to the breath. So the thoughts don't have the same muscle control over us. However, we're in a country right now that is the exact opposite of that. Our advertising, the consumerism, is driven by activating our ego desires, activating, therefore, our ego mind, activating, therefore, the parts of us that cling, activating, therefore, us to have more desires, to seek more pleasure and believe that we can, and to avoid more pain and believe that we can. And the number one industry, you got it, has been illegally advertising now since the late 80s. Prior to the late 80s, the pharmaceutical companies were not allowed to advertise, and we are one of the only two countries planet-wide that has pharmaceutical companies advertising on TV at this point. New Zealand is the other one, interestingly enough. I don't understand that one, but we'll let that go for now. So in our country, now we have this massive monopoly over the way that healthcare gets delivered in our country, with the options of the two main tools being surgery or medication. And the studies done that show that our healthcare system is failing when it comes to chronic issues, meaning day-to-day lifestyle, which is where holistic lifestyle tools comes into play. But we're strong in trauma, which is kind of like big guns, big shiny stuff that our ego mind attaches to and says, I want that, the glare, the glamour. And that would make sense that we then are really good at trauma because we've got the cool equipment and the cool tools to take care of the trauma. I'm not knocking it. I'm trying to create a textural understanding of the ego mind's mechanisms. So we're told that through our medical system, the whole entire backdrop of the healthcare of our country, the whole way that health is framed, that human life at this point, the ability to have longevity and to do so vibrantly, or eventually having high blood pressure, eventually having high cholesterol, eventually having arthritis, eventually having osteoporosis, is framed for us by the medical industry, with its two main tools being cut it out, surgery, or drugs. And if it's pain, you have pain, then you get drugs, so you don't have to have any pain. That is making our ego minds unrealistic beyond anything any meditating monk for the last 10,000, 20,000, however long there's been humans meditating, has ever had to deal with. We are set up within an extraordinary situation right now in America and worldwide with any modernized economy. The exact reason why we would meditate is the exact mechanisms and machinery behind our country right now. So if you're questioning how much more difficult your mind has been to work with in the last few years, this is very much part of the reason. How much do you have people around you talking about scarcity, talking about lack? What happened after the housing bubble burst? What happened after the banking bailout? Now, some even talk about it's been going back to Bush's tax subsidies post 9/11, along with the war on terrorism, all of that being fear. So the more fear, notice emotion, for survival, that's old reptilian brain, the more afraid we are for survival, the more baseline and reactive we're going to be, the less front of the brain, more advanced self-discipline we're going to be able to engage. And then, therefore, the more obese we come with our ego mind. I'll say that again. And then, therefore, the more obese we come with our ego mind in the outer, in what we experience in the outer, in the physical body, on the physical plane, in our physical environment, in our homes, in our communities, in our careers, in our lives, is all mirroring what we think and feel. Right, so we're going to put the brakes on all of that. There are reasons that you feel the way you do. There are reasons why you have been so focused on struggling for the last couple of years. There are reasons why you feel so negative. There are reasons why you feel so afraid. And it's not just these causes only. I mean, there's the fact that, and I've talked about this on many shows, that now is considered in the evolution of humankind the spiritual awakening time. So as more and more of us awaken and enlighten, meaning light, we bring more down into our minds, so we're clearing out more of our ego mind and connected to more of our higher self. Our bodies are circulating more light. There's less density. There's less reactivity because we're doing the work. There's more of us doing yoga nowadays than ever before, right? It's really trendy now. Meditation is actually talked about. It's now even studied by neuroscience. So that's come into our society at a more, accepted level. There's more people engaged in energy healing and natural healing than ever before. There's more people engaged in this kind of work to enlighten and awaken. And as that happens, a natural cofactor of that is there's still people in the fear mode or the dark mode, light and dark. One needs the other. It's kind of an advanced understanding, but just think of the yin-yang symbol, and that should help you understand there's a balance to stuff. I know that as a Reiki master, when I went and lived with a first roommate and then a second roommate, there was I was taught eventually when I came back and reported to a friend of my Reiki master what I was experiencing. She said, you are going to catalyze people's fear sometimes with your vibration. It's going to threaten their ego mind, because then their ego mind knows the gig is up. It's time to change. When they get by the light in the sense that the light is present and high next to them, it catalyzes the fear in their ego mind because the ego mind likes things to stay the same. And that includes staying stuck in density or fear of lack or obesity, which is all dense thinking, dense physical emotions, dense reactivity. And we stay stuck. We stay clinging. We're the monkey with the hand on the banana, trapped in the gourd with our hand in our forearm, which is basically us making prisoners of ourselves with our own mind's desires and thinking. Do you see? So there are reasons why right now it's such a funky time with our minds. Or we avoid this. We don't even listen to shows like this. We stay on the surface of life and we live our lives with our families and our friends and we stay engaged at the physical level. We're happy to a degree. We eat what we want. We drive what we want. We have the kind of money that we have. That's usually a good level. We're doing the material thing until there's a crisis that forces us to look at our insides or not and die, as Gary Douglas said from Access Consciousness. When we look at the soul reasons, my last client who just left prior to the radio show, she was amazed that we were dealing with flower essences and the soul connection to her feet just having had surgery. This is the one that, if you listen last week, I'm helping to regenerate the deadened nerves from the cut in her foot to put the screw in the metatarsus so her toes wouldn't overlap. They cut and separated the hammer toes and then they flatten the toes and put screws in the metatarsus up to the big toe and the next two toes. So we're working to regenerate the nerves and then be hurt for her to be able to have full use of the toes back. And actually, we got a really good sign today. The toes were jiggling. So we're getting there. It was really quick. But she was surprised that we would be working with flower essences that addressed the soul holding up energy that's psychic, that's up in the third eye between the eyebrows, and that's at the crown chakra in the head, like all of this congestion, which she has sinus issues. We've been working together for about a year now, and she has sinus issues, and sinus issues are indicative that we're clogged. We're not listening to our insights or our sight in. We're not listening to our inner wisdom, and so we'll get clogged, especially when we have kind of innate abilities to be more spiritually attuned or psychically attuned than, let's say, a person who might be more, I don't know, musically inclined or more more business-oriented with numbers. Or I don't mean to exclude, make them mutually exclusive. I'm just trying to draw some kind of contrast. There's a certain intelligence that is more wired for a spiritual psychic kind of ability than others, and that we needed to unclog that area to get the energy flushing down through her central nervous system, which is the reason why she had trouble with her feet. We could say it's because she was a ballet dancer, which is part of the reason at the physical level, but the way this stuff works is in order to heal it, we've got to heal the vulnerability that existed in the feet in the first place due to soul level issues that bled up into the emotional level and the mental level, that bled up into habitual ways of thinking and choosing and being. And then our body's energy circuitry following along with our typical thoughts and feelings. Yeah. Yeah. Come on back. The healing's next. Thanks. Okay, so if the mechanism of our ego mind is to label so that we can make sense out of our physical environment and we can exist on the physical plane and navigate it and schedule and organize and understand what we're seeing in our environment and label it and then therefore make sense out of our physical environment and survive, then that means the labeling that goes on requires judging. It's this, not that. Then in comes the mechanism of the second brain, the emotional brain. Desire this, not that. With the emotional connections we've had historically with different sensory experiences and different objects and different people. And then after that comes in the connection to the ego mind with the, then therefore, based on these labels and judgments, or points of view, the assessment of then therefore desire this because this will lead to pleasure, and don't go near that because that will lead to pain. And so we have advertising coming in exactly on that. I mean, I'm thinking even of the most recent book, Eat This, Not That. Look at that advertising. It's working exactly with this mechanism. So in the sense of this being what judgment is, let's carry it now into when we're operating at group in the group setting. Because if we're operating in a group setting, everybody else is doing the same thing as our minds. At this most mechanistic basic level, they'll have, again, their own perceptions and historical associations and experiences that we can't possibly have an understanding of completely. So people judge. It's the nature of the mind. The mind needs to label to make sense out of the physical environment, hence judgment. And then people's history comes in and their emotional connection to the things they're judging and the associations they're making between the red apple versus the apple juice, or between the orange versus the cantaloupe, or between the man that's dressed as a businessman eating a salad versus the hippie eating beef. That doesn't fit, does it? There's something wrong with that, right? It's not a clean judgment or label. They're supposed to be based on stereotypes. So it reinforces the ego mind, it reinforces the labeling, and it reinforces stereotypes, and it reinforces a sense of fitting in to that kind of label and that kind of person. So I emotionally belong to this type of group, and then therefore have this type of look, and then therefore have this style of thinking, and I don't wear that piece of that kind of clothing, and I don't wear those kinds of shoes, and I don't drive that kind of car because that's not my identity that I want, that I label as all of these factors contribute to a certain type of person that I don't want to be because of A, B, C, and D in my past, and because that's what I think of those types of people. I want to be this type of person, therefore I must buy these kinds of products, drive this kind of car, etc., etc. There's not a lot of freedom in that. So why would you buy into that? The first level is awareness of all of that. Nowadays, it's kind of funny. I use the word authentic on purpose because it's being used a lot in our country apparently right now. Be true to yourself. There's a lot of desire to come out of that. So why don't we, I'm getting ready, as you can tell, do healing. But the second element, let's just talk for a minute, is choice. And choice can only happen when we're in non-reactivity, right? When we're not habitually, robotically going through our day. When we're taking time to have awareness to make an authentic choice, true to ourselves, not our conditioning or our habitual training or mechanistic thinking. That's about 85%, and some say all the way up to 95%. Responsible for the choices we make, that only 5 to 15% comes from prefrontal cortex or neocortexal thinking, meaning liberated non-mechanistic thinking. We can change that with the more we slow down and the more awareness is applied to, here's an access consciousness tool. That's an interesting point of view. It's a way to gain some of the most important benefits from a steady meditation practice without meditating, or even if you are a meditator, is to unplug the charge from our thoughts that can lead us down these trails that we're following because it has the emotional component to it that is either, yes, we're getting that pleasure, or no, we get to avoid that pain. So we'll follow along that train of thoughts because we have that typical emotional charge that is connected to that type of thinking. With awareness, we can pull off of that habituated robotic functioning. That's an interesting point of view, and cut the cycle right there. Like what we talked, if you haven't listened to last week's show, go ahead and listen to it because that explains more of these mechanics. So with the awareness, then we have more liberated choice. One last tip is in the arena of making choice. My first meditation teacher, one of the best pieces of advice I was ever given to come out of the obesity of the ego mind and the demands of the ego mind and how the ego mind with its desires and clinging to seeking pleasure and avoiding pain and all the labels that we construe that this means pleasure and this means pain, to get our hands unstuck as the monkey from the gourd wrapped around the banana we desire, do the exact opposite of what your mind wants. You're sitting there with a desire for a third piece of pizza, eat 2.5. It'll blow the ego mind away, so much so that it just is quiet. It doesn't know what to do. Do the exact opposite of what your mind wants. You want to sleep in another 10 minutes? Get up 10 minutes earlier. Slowly, you can weave a thread into your life of discipline over this obese ego mind, screaming its desires, its judgments, and its associations with pain and pleasure, and unwiring it and undoing its control and dominance. And eventually, it'll allow you to be less plugged in to groupthink and more able to think for yourself and more able to bring your own power back to your own energy circuits, meaning your chakras, to be able to have more identification of what you actually genuinely feel, and you'll be less robotic. The more robotic we are, the more vulnerable we are to groupthink, the less freedom and authenticity there is. So again, another suggestion, number one suggestion I've been making since day one, is slow down enough to observe your thoughts and be aware of your thoughts and emotions and how they connect. An interesting point of view, that point of view. So we're going to go ahead and go into theta healing. You don't want to be driving or operating heavy machinery. You want to let yourself be in theta brainwave state so you're safe. And we'll close the show out just with this theta healing. Okay. Creator, it is commanded that you pull the belief from the core level, the genetic level, the soul level, and resolving it at the history level. I can't fit in. Yes. Replacing it with, I can fit in. Yes. Show me. Creator, it is commanded, please, you download the feeling of fitting in. Show me. Creator, it is commanded, please, you download the knowing how to go about their day-to-day lives for all the listeners now and in the future. Fitting in. Show me. And Creator, it is commanded, you download the Creator's perspective, definition, and understanding of fitting in for each of their highest and best with grace and ease. Creator, it is commanded, you pull the belief at all the levels, resolving it at the history level. I am unworthy. Yes, replacing it with, I am worthy. Yes, show me. Creator, it is commanded, please, you pull the belief at all the levels, resolving it at the history level. I can't. Yes, replacing it with, I can. Yes, show me. And Creator, it is commanded, you pull the belief at all the levels, resolving it at the history level. There is never enough. Yes, replacing it with, there is always more than enough. Yes. Show me. Creator, it is commanded you download the feeling of there being more than enough. Show me. And Creator, it is commanded, please, you download the knowing how to go about their day-to-day lives with there being more than enough. Show me. And Creator, it is commanded, please, you download the Creator's perspective, definition, and understanding of abundance for each of their highest and best with grace and ease. Show me. And the less concerned you are with fitting in, the more freedom you'll have. Even if you do want to fit in, you can do it by choice. So that's what that first healing was for. It's so good to be alive. Have a great weekend. Blessings. Bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us and allowing yourself this time to expand and become more of who you're here to be. Dr. K has a range of different offerings of her vibrational upgrades at all price points, including free. So for more information, please go to www.allisonjk.com. Dr. K's first book, What If There's Nothing Wrong, is available on Amazon.com. Dr. K also has a weekly clearing and activation call that is attended by her most advanced clients and students, an important activity in keeping themselves aligned and their vibration high. We'd love to have you come and play. Om Shanti.